Hello and welcome to Thrift Shop Biography. This is the one about Betty Davis. Thank you for listening.
Hi.
Hello.
So this week we've been reading a book by Betty Davis.
We have.
Betty, right?
Betty. It's spelt Bet.
Yeah.
With an E. But it's Betty.
But Bette Midler is Bette with an E. She's Bette, not
True.
Betty.
But it is Betty.
But yeah, we've decided we're going
to
call
her
Betty.
I've had to Google her whole life to definitely clarify that everyone calls her Betty.
Well, you got me to watch This Is Your Life.
This Is Your Life, and all her oldest friends and family call her Betty.
Betty.
So that's confirmed it.
Yeah, so her name's Betty.
So we've smoothed that out now.
Yeah, all right. So so she's called Betty
also
Davis.
So Madonna says Betty Davis. Monroe.
She's got Betty Davis eyes.
DiMaggio. Yeah. Betty Davis eyes. Okay, that's
all right.
Definite.
If Madonna's confirmed it, then.
Yeah.
And the book. So let's speak clear about this one. It's not her actual autobiography of her whole life, right?
Yeah, it's a later in life addition to an earlier biography, which neither of us knew when one or the other of us found it in a charity shop, can't remember which.
Or a thrift shop for our American listeners.
That's true. Yeah.
So it's kind of like an anecdotal book. She wrote it like the age of 75 with a few episodes that weren't in her original autobiography.
And we should have known because it's called This and That.
This and that.
That's a clue.
Yeah, there you go. And it's entertaining. It's just anecdotal
base.
It's very informative. I learned loads of new stuff. But I have to say, her daughter has written a kind of expose about her, what Betty Davis is like as a
mom. My mother's keeper.
Right. Have you read that, by the way?
No.
Okay. So Betty Davis got wind that this book was being published at the time she was about to publish this book we're going to discuss today. But before this book was published, she went back in and addressed the fact that her daughter had been writing a book. Now, do you think that... You know, we did Mommy Dearest a few weeks ago. Do you think that Betty Davis's daughter saw Joan Crawford's daughter write a book?
I
could write a book like this and make money.
And like I said, the killer one is Marlena Dietrich's. That's the best one. Which we must review.
What, Marlena Dietrich's daughter wrote a book?
Better. I don't know why it isn't as famous. Mommy Dearest was really famous.
Yeah.
This one seemed to be following on the pattern of it.
So we...
And fell flat, did it? Or did everyone read it?
I didn't know that Marlena Dietrich's daughter wrote a book about her.
Ah.
And I know everything.
Wow. I learned that from Paul O'Grady. Not personally.
From his book?
When he talks about it sometimes.
Okay.
He always says, you've got to read it. We've got to read it at some point.
So was Mommy Dearest the first one? It was the first hugely successful one, right?
It's the most famous one.
Yeah. And of course, that's going to spawn imitators, because who wouldn't?
Yeah.
When you see a book that's become that successful, and let's just say you had a fractious relationship with your mother anyway, I mean, why not sell her out and make some money?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
If you also didn't want to have a mother anymore, and you wanted to cut yourself off, because that's definitely what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And it worked, apparently.
But that in itself tells me that Betty Davis was not a great mother.
Do you know what? If I had to say one way or the other to guess, I'm going to say she was a pretty terrible mother, and I'm glad she isn't my mother.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Good. She's a great actress.
Great actress.
It's interesting, like, the family expose, because there are other, like you say, Marlena Dietrich, Betty Davis, daughters, both written books, but there are other books now, like Madonna's brother wrote a book about her, which was really damning. Courtney Love's mum has written a book about having Courtney Love as a daughter. Oh, Jermaine Jackson's.
Yeah,
that's a different kind of, it was a supportive.
Yeah.
But the biography written by a family member... I didn't realise there were so many.
Yeah,
but I wonder whether that all stemmed from Mommy Dearest, one way or another.
The thing is that in real life, but, you know, reporters always go after the family and friends. So I guess eventually they go, well, if you're going to make money off my story, I'll write it, because they never report it properly either.
Yeah, put the record
straight.
So I guess
eventually they realise there's a demand.
Yeah.
So everyone's knocking at their door.
Yeah.
Betty Davis must be an insane, horrendous mother. I'm going to publish your book, tell us all, or pay you all this money.
So in this book, Betty Davis, right at the beginning, kind of voices her dismay that her daughter's done this, because she thinks they've had a really good relationship.
Yeah.
She's been a wonderful mother. You kind of think, was she really?
Was she really?
Now, defending herself against an attack.
Yeah. Hey, stop. You're supposed to ask me what I thought of Betty Davis.
What did you think of Betty Davis before you read this book?
Well, it's funny you should ask me that. I know quite a lot about her because of Joan Crawford. Mm-hmm. And I did once read a book about the two of them. This is years ago, though. Mm-hmm. So it's, I thought she was probably a monstrous Hollywood diva, pretty tough. And what do I think of her now? You've got to ask me. I pretty much think she is that person.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so pleased you said that.
Yeah.
Because I've always been aware of Betty Davis, of course, because she's an iconic Hollywood star. But I've never warmed to her. I think she's a fantastic actress. But I think that kind of hard-faced look her characters have, that's her.
I do too.
Yeah,
I don't dislike her for it, but I'm sure her circle of friends, if you're in on the inside, I'm sure she's lovely to you. I don't know how much I'd like to be on the outside.
One thing I picked up from this book is that the thing I get about Betty Davis and how she is with people, if she respects you and your work ethic, you're in, and you almost have a friend for life.
Yeah.
If you do something to remotely upset her, then you'll have a problem with her. Yeah.
Yeah. She does seem to have been lovely to cast and crew, backstage people and stuff. She seems to really support the underdog.
Yeah, she takes her work, and she came from, like, the birth of the talkies, right? Was she even in silent movies? But I think, no, she was theatre, right? And then when the movies became talkies, they actually went to theatre to get actors who could actually talk.
Yeah, right?
So she came from that real staunch group of actors who came from theatre, and they worked really hard. She appears to have no time for modern celebrity and all the faff, and we just called her a diva. Well, you did. But I think she is to a certain extent, but I also think she has no time for divas who play up on film sets and make demands.
Yes.
She's a real grafter.
Yeah, she is a real grafter.
And she respects other people who are real grafters. But I think, was it Faye Dunaway? She talks about somebody later on, like the next generation of actors.
She crucifies
who turned
her
up late and held up the film. Yeah, she absolutely...
Yeah, I think there was a film she did, and there were 200 badly paid or not paid crew in a boiling hot church waiting for 2 hours or something because Faye Dunaway was swanning around in a limo drinking champagne.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah. No time for that at all.
Nope.
Or anyone that doesn't take the job really seriously or wants to be a great actor. She is a great actor.
Yeah.
We must say that.
Oh, she's amazing. Absolutely.
And she doesn't care if she looks ugly or, you know. But yeah, all the makeup in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, which was grotesque.
Yes.
They actually thought it was too much.
Yeah.
But she was right. It is grotesque. And she was bang on.
Yeah.
But she doesn't care about looking like a fool or looking old. She grew old gracefully. She's on all those chat shows looking
like an old lady.
Like an old lady. But it's great. You've got to respect it.
Yeah.
She is great.
Oh, everything we've just said about her, like right at the beginning, I said, I think she's probably a bit of an old bag. But everything we just said about her, I fully respect that and I understand that. So actually, if that makes her an old bag, then I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
I just realised I actually really like her now in this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. I've watched a lot of interviews after reading this book. She is great.
She's great as long as you keep on the right side of her.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to know her.
Well, no, you would like to know her, just don't upset her.
No, I wouldn't want the stress.
You're terrified. I like to
know her from afar.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's
okay,
fine.
Well, she's dead now, so.
That's great. Safe.
So this is a kind of odd book in that it's not the autobiography. We don't get her childhood and her rise to fame, etc., etc. It's a series of anecdotes, really, from later in life and reflections.
It's like a really nice dinner party with Betty Davis and she respects you.
Yeah. Also, it starts at a time where she's been quite poorly and she's been in hospital.
Mm.
She had a mastectomy, which then continued into a stroke or something.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I think she kind of then wrote this book in recovery, have I understood that right?
Yeah. She said she didn't think there was any point telling any more anecdotes, and then she realised that recovering and going into older life and surviving in the industry and everything might be a story for people to be inspired by.
Because the book was essentially written and with the publisher when the shock of her daughter's book materialised. And so she went back to amend this book. And I think that's a shame in a way, because I think it begins with her saying, oh, my daughter wrote this book. So it kind of starts a bit weird.
She says she wrote it, and then with a publisher wanted to publish it, then it got dropped.
I think the publisher who dropped it was the publisher who published her daughter's book.
It is.
Wow.
Double-crossing, son of a...
Double-crossing Betty Davis. Yeah. Wow, yeah, they're all dead now.
But they went out not straight jackets. What do you call it?
What?
Jackets when you don't want to get shot. It's not a straight jacket.
It's not. It's a bulletproof vest.
That's the one. I bet that's what they had after that.
Yeah. Oh, no, so she actually talks about her assistant, right? Oh, my God, I've forgotten her name.
Yeah, Catherine.
Catherine. Now, I think that's almost a retaliation.
Yeah.
About her daughter, like, well, not having a daughter, maybe.
Back to the beginning again, right?
Yeah.
She says that she hasn't changed a word of the book at all. It's published as it was, with the addition of a letter to her daughter at the end. So, if that's to be believed...
I don't believe it.
Ah, interesting, because at some point she says about her daughter saying what a lovely childhood she had, and she put, I wonder if she remembers this now.
Right.
And I thought, that's an addition, surely. Yeah. Plus, how much she gushes about the assistant as if that's her daughter, and then the back cover is a big picture of her with her assistant. And they were only together 7 years, and by the end of the book, she'd moved on. But she loved her and was always there for her, like a daughter.
Yeah.
I agree, it does seem like maybe she...
Yeah. No, she went... I felt there were like three or four parts in this book where she kind of highlighted what a wonderful mother she was.
Yeah.
And I think it's totally because there was a book out saying what a terrible mother she was.
And she'd actually quoted in full the pages of an interview with her daughter.
Yes.
And quoted everything
verbatim.
The daughter said. Yeah.
Yeah, verbatim. It's a transcript of the interview. This is a quote from the middle of the book. So from the transcripts of the interviews of her daughter and her son... Betty Davis has written, bearing in mind she says that this is written before her daughter wrote the book. So Betty Davis says, how proud I was that BD seemed so completely approving of me as a parent. My greatest compliment as a mother was the day she told me she was bringing up her sons the way she and Michael were brought up.
Yeah, she's added that in.
It must have been a real shock for her, actually, that her daughter did stoop to publishing that book.
She says... I've got a quote that I wrote down. She says, I will never recover as completely from BD's book, her daughter is called BD,
BD, yeah,
as I have from the stroke. They were both shattering experiences.
Wow.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That stroke was bad.
Yeah.
You can understand that. Especially,
it's betrayal.
It is. And if you think that she could have just talked to her mum. I don't know if she ever did, but...
But also, I tell you something, like these celebrities, these massive film stars, I do think that even if they think they're humble and stuff, I think there's such a streak of narcissism in them. There kind of has to be a star of that magnitude.
Yeah.
And I also think that people who are massively successful in film stars, they're quite often away because they're filming.
Yeah.
I think in their heads, they create this world where actually they're a good parent who provides for their children, but not in the way the child wants because they're not there. So I think the shock for Betty Davis might not be that her daughter had written a book, but the fact that her daughter actually didn't think she was a very good mother. Because in her own head, she might have thought, well, I provided for her. She's had everything she wanted, but her daughter might have...
I bought her a swimming pool. They didn't even say thanks.
Yeah. Whereas her that's not the needs that her daughter had. So tell me, Betty Davis, what do you think is her most defining role, if she has one? What do our generation know her for the most?
It is What Happened to
Baby
Jane.
It's Baby Jane, right?
Well, for me, it is anyway.
Yeah, I find it quite interesting when we did the Jane Fonda podcast recently, we both kind of said, oh, Barbarella is the thing that we know her most for, whereas she's won Oscars for other roles, but somehow the film, the character with the most iconic visual image is the one that you're kind of known for. And that's the same with Betty Davis. She's won Oscars for other films. She's an
so
amazing actress, but the one where she has that grotesque face, that's the one that
cult
we all...
classics, isn't
it? Yeah.
And they hadn't hardly have a budget for it. It was after her main film career was over and she was doing TV.
Yeah.
And they were old birds, that's to quote her.
Yeah.
And nobody thought that they could invest in a film with older women.
Yeah.
And they were trying to make it with some other people, and eventually the bloke said, okay, no, it is for these women, and yeah. they funded it, but it was really low budget, so they agreed a cut down fee and a percentage, which was did wow, them very
yeah.
well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the rest of it hangs on just brilliant performances, yeah. really.
Yeah.
Good direction, obviously, brilliant performances.
Like you say about her makeup, that was totally her choice, and the director wanted yeah. her to tone it down. She's like, no, you yeah. have to trust me on this. This yeah. is what. And then conversely, yeah. Joan Crawford
wanted to
look beautiful.
And she does, actually.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, yeah. she does, which is interesting in itself that yeah. she didn't feel beautiful without yeah. her glamorous makeup yeah. on. And Betty Davis was like, well, no, you've been in this house for 20 yeah. years. You know? Even to the point where there's a scene of her hand coming down the banister and she had nail polish on, and the director said, no, you have to take your nail polish off. And Joan Crawford's like, please let me have my yeah, nail polish. Yeah.
Now my hands must look good. Now, so did he win that fight? Did she have nail polish on or not?
Oh, I don't. It'd be interesting. We should watch it again. But I think she did. I think she was allowed her nail polish because she wasn't.
Because if I was confined to a room, I would definitely wear nail polish.
Wear varnish, yeah.
It's all you've got.
Yeah.
You've got time. But anyway, she did look serenely beautiful
yeah,
in that
she
without
really
makeup.
Did.
She's,
yeah.
she's a natural beauty. And yes. actually, when she normally puts makeup on, she can look quite fierce.
Yes.
This isn't about Joan Crawford.
You said something here that is so interesting. It's not about Joan Crawford. Whatever Happened to Baby Jane was the only film which Betty Davis and Joan Crawford completed together. They started yeah. another one, which never got finished. Which was, what, a six-week filming period?
Yeah.
Well, they're forever cemented together.
Yeah,
you can't think of one yeah. without the other. Yeah. And yet they only ever made that film together.
That's
and
true.
And Betty Davis said since then, whenever she's done live appearances, interviews, she's always asked about Joan Crawford.
It's true. But it is hilarious. She starts saying, I really don't have anything bad to say about Joan Crawford. She's a great actress. And then, it all comes out. You know, oh, she had these different bras of different sizes. She was so fake, you know.
There was a scene when I had to fall on yeah. top of them and it winded me. It was like falling yeah. on two footballs. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh, no, you're right. Oh, and then when
the Oscar stuff. Is that what you're going to say?
No, I was going to talk about the Pepsi because obviously through Mommy Dearest, we
yes.
knew that Joan Crawford had married the Pepsi man. And
yes.
so she had a Pepsi machine installed on the film set.
Yeah.
Oh, Betty Davis said that she had a Pepsi spiked with vodka.
Yes, a Pepsi always had vodka in it. Of course she did because
yeah,
she's
right.
an alcoholic. And when she actually says Mommy Dearest, when she read it, she thought, oh, that's a child who's dealing with a parent who's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
As simple as that. And that's mm-hmm. what I said, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, 100%
what you
said.
It's just what it's about,
yeah.
alcoholism.
Do you know how naive I am? I just thought she drank Pepsi. And when
she
Betty
was
Davis
a bit
said
insane.
That, yeah, yeah, no.
Yeah.
And then when Betty Davis said she had vodka, all of a sudden it just went click
yeah,
in my head.
Of course. Yeah.
She had vodka
yeah.
in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit sad, really, but there you go.
Should just say for advertising purposes that other mixers are available.
Yes.
What's interesting about the whole filming and aftermath of Baby Jane is how this is Betty Davis's side of the story. And obviously,
yeah.
the book we read about Joan Crawford was not written by Joan
no.
Crawford. So I only really have Betty Davis's side of the
yeah.
filming of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. And it kind of sounds like, well, Joan Crawford went to her first with the idea of making
yes.
it and would only do it if Betty Davis was in it.
Yeah.
Betty Davis seemed incredibly supportive of Joan Crawford, but to the point where I thought they had a really good working relationship on it, but then yeah afterwards
yeah.
when she was nominated for the Oscar
yeah so Betty Davis was nominated for
yes.
the Oscar
yes
which sent Joan Crawford insane
mm-hmm.
So I don't know, to even it out, she went round all the other nominees who were in Broadway shows so that if they'd have won, they couldn't have been there to collect it because they were in shows, and said, if you win it, I'll collect it for
wow.
you. So the odds of one or the other going up were actually in Joan's favour at that point.
Yeah.
And so Betty Davis didn't win it and Joan Crawford got to go up and accept it. And she said when she walked past her with the Oscar, the gloating look she gave
yeah.
her.
But she was also actively lobbying on behalf of the other actresses, like
yeah.
telling people to vote for them, i.e. not vote for Betty Davis. But like Betty Davis said, they worked for such a small fee that they had percentage of box office takings. And Betty Davis said, when you win an Oscar, the film goes back out into circulation. You get about another $1 million profit.
Yeah.
So Joan Crawford really shot herself
yeah.
in the foot to be that.
Just to not be outdone by her equal partner. It's hilarious, isn't it?
It's hilarious, but it's also kind of sad. You're kind of just, you know, women are just so often pitched against each other anyway by the press. They're compared.
She'd have done that anyway. She obviously just was insanely jealous and couldn't stand somebody just beating her at anything, whoever that was.
Wow.
But then when they got cast in another film, because they got on all right on the other one, but after all that had happened, they started filming, but she said she thought that Joan Crawford was actually terrified because she knew what she'd done.
Yeah.
So she feigned illness. And
In the end, they had to get somebody else, right?
It was Vivien Leigh, wasn't it?
It was Olivia de Havilland.
Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah.
But, she actually couldn't go through a film when she knew she'd been such a bitch to Betty Davis.
Well, she had been such a bitch, to be honest. Yeah. And Betty Davis arguably should have won an Oscar for Baby Davis.
You see, if Joan Crawford's daughter had the balls of Betty Davis, then she could have stood up to her.
Yeah.
Because she obviously wasn't strong enough to take facing somebody that she'd been an arsehole to.
Wow.
Yeah. So she could be stood up to. If you were strong enough.
So Betty Davis actually won her first Oscar for a film called Dangerous. And she actually says she knew it wasn't her best acting performance. And she says that it is the Oscar. She says, I knew, everyone knew that it was a please forgive us for not giving you the Oscar last year when you should have won it for your performance of Mildred in Of Human Bondage.
Oh.
Now that goes to show, I'm so painfully aware these days that award ceremonies, the people that win them, it's just all orchestrated. Mm. I think it's more obvious than ever major studios and media companies pay for major stars to win them, or they're heavily influenced by everything but actual performances in the film.
Mm.
And it's interesting that even all the way back, that Betty Davis is even saying that she basically got her first Oscar because she didn't get one the year before.
Yeah.
And maybe her studio, she's the bankable star at that moment in time.
Mm.
And she's, you know, they're basically orchestrating her to win that Oscar.
Yeah.
It's been like that all along.
Yeah,
the awards are created.
Yeah, tool, 100%.
Yeah. Even like the Grammys that happened this week, Harry Styles won.
It's
just like
lately.
Yeah, it's because he's the show pony for one of the biggest media companies in the world.
Mm.
They're paying for that to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we were just talking about lies and truths and stuff. Even to that extent, the award ceremonies, it's all theatre. Every step of the way, everything is theatre.
It is. It's all showbiz.
Yeah.
Smoke and mirrors.
It is. It's all lies.
Yeah.
It's all lies. Okay, one thing in this book that I had no knowledge of whatsoever, and I bet you did, the Hollywood canteen.
I did know about it.
Yeah.
Because I guess I've read other books of that sort of period.
Uh-huh.
I did. And it's great, isn't it? It's amazing.
It's amazing. Mm. Yeah, and it's amazing that she kind of brought all that together. And
I didn't know she'd originated it.
Well, we've only got her word for
it. Well, that's true. Okay, no, it isn't actually. It was a bloke, can't remember his name, but it was another actor came to her, but then she formed it with him.
She made it happen.
And her job... Oh, hang on. Let's explain what it is.
Oh, yeah. Tell everyone what the Hollywood canteen is.
Well, it was a project where they got two massive warehouses at the beginning of the war, 1940, because they had an idea that all these servicemen who were coming through California and going off to war, very likely to die or just to have a hideous time.
Yeah.
To bring some Hollywood glamour into their lives and give them some hope and joy and meet Hollywood stars. So they got these two massive warehouses. All the film studios got behind it. So they got builders and built the whole kitchens and the canteen. They built podiums so that there was a viewing gallery so people could buy tickets to look at this whole thing. They had a bandstand. Different bands played every night. People got fed. And waiters and waitresses might be Rita Hayworth or Frank Sinatra or Betty Davis or anybody. People serving behind the counter were Hollywood stars. It might be Harry James's big band playing. Mm-hmm. It could be Charlie Chaplin. It could be anybody. Different Hollywood stars would dance with you as well. It's
incredible.
Really amazing.
Yeah. And they all gave their time up.
For free.
I think Betty Davis said the person who gave most of their time up was Marlene Dietrich.
That'll be how I know about it.
Right,
her daughter's book, yeah. Yeah, it's really cool, isn't it?
Really cool, actually.
Yeah. And Betty Davis's main job that she undertook was to make sure there was enough Hollywood stars.
Mm-hmm.
because lots of obviously smaller people volunteered and extras probably and all sorts to make sure there was every night there were big names.
Yeah.
And she managed it.
She did, but then at some point, because it was so successful, didn't the board, I think it was James Cagney, who then kind of came in with all these rules and stipulations and said, you know what, you can't just ask our actors to do stuff. And they really, not tried to shut it down.
Oh, you but can't they, like, find them to, directly.
You have to go through their agents and stuff. And Betty Davis is like, the only way it works, because we need these stars, we need them to come, you know, I don't know who I'm getting from one day to the next, so I need to be able to call up Marlene Dietrich and say, can you come tomorrow? It won't work if I have to go through their agents. So she really put her foot down and said, if you're going to make us do it this way, then it has to close.
Yeah.
And then within 24 hours, they said, I'll just carry on what you've always been doing.
And also, if she really couldn't get anyone, she always turned up.
Mm-hmm.
So there was definitely going to be someone.
God, imagine that going And that is such an important thing to do for those men who were basically going off to be shot at.
Yeah, and shoot.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I've had enough of war lately.
Yeah, let's not talk about it. Let's talk about the fun bit.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That was even thought of. And
they got the scene painters to paint murals and stuff as well. So it was a really great place, it sounded.
Yeah. And it ran for years, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it ran right up to VJ Day.
Yeah, it did. Right. Also, they made a mint. They had so much money. They charged a lot of money for the viewing tickets.
Right.
Which must have been fantastic to watch all this going on.
So people, like normal people, would just pay to go in the viewing gallery and watch Hollywood stars serving the troops.
And then dancing with them. And then the band's playing and the entertainment.
Uh-huh.
It's brilliant. And they had a million and a half or something by the end. And then they used it to fund projects to put swimming pools into hospitals for servicemen and all that sort of stuff.
Wow.
It's really an achievement.
Yeah.
And so, this book goes into that a lot, which is it's really great. And then also talks about when she's, hang on, when is it? A lot older. 40 years later, basically, so in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she gets honoured for this.
Yeah.
And she gets, it's the highest medal a civilian can get from the Army, Navy, Air Force, everybody.
Amazing that was done 40 years later.
Yeah.
I think she said it was the thing she was most proud of, right?
Yeah. In her later life, following that award, she got loads of awards and she had a really nice time as an older lady,
mm-hmm.
Being interviewed and going to loads of awards, getting Lifetime Achievement Awards, just actually being acclaimed.
Mm-hmm.
That's really nice. It's lucky not everyone lives to get that. She lived a nice long life.
Yeah.
Carried on working too into the 70s. She adapted herself to television.
I loved reading that because I think people were really snobby back in the day. It's not like now. We have Netflix and all the budget's gone into TV. So actually a lot of the big film stars now have TV series.
Do.
Whereas back in the day they didn't.
No.
She just came from that stable of work. Yeah, where her work ethic was strong. So Hollywood didn't want her anymore because she passed a certain age.
Yeah.
All right, she'll go and do TV. Yeah. She actually talks about the snobbery and how she was never party to it. You kind of think right on.
Yeah, I know. Okay, that's probably my second favourite job of hers, is Death on the Nile.
Yes.
It's just full of amazing people.
I've watched it recently, actually.
Yeah.
What I was really interested to read about that, is it David Niven and Peter Ustinov? I can't remember now.
Yes, it is.
How nervous she was to work with them.
Yeah, because they're legends. And
they were nervous to work with her.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
I was just, at that point in her career, she'd probably been acting for like 45 years at that point, to even think that she might be nervous acting opposite someone.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And younger Maggie Smith was cohort in that.
Yeah, and she loved working with her. She wished they'd had more scenes together, actually.
Yeah, and I bet they had a right laugh. Worth watching just for those two.
But I think the director was a bit off with her initially. This is another thing I get about her, is that she'll say something like, as soon as she turned up on set, I think the director said to her, well, I'm glad you're here. I hope you know your lines.
Yeah.
And she's like, I've always known.
It's that shocking thing.
Lines.
If you can't talk to her like that we encountered with Michael Jackson and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
But then, interestingly, she'll retell that in the book. She'll say, oh, the director said, I hope you know your lines. And then she's like, of course I know my lines. She goes, I really respect him as a director. So she'll counter it with saying something positive about that person. But you probably think she's fuming, actually.
Yeah. But actually, you don't know what arsehole things she said to him leading up to that.
Well, and I also think when you're someone like Bette Davis, your reputation probably does precede you.
That's true.
So he might be really nervous about working with her, and it just comes out
wrong. Maybe it was just a throwaway line.
That whole reputation thing, the Mariah Carey book really educated me on that. She's had such a reputation of being a terrible, demanding diva.
Yeah.
And actually, weirdly, it was Paul O'Grady again who had his talk show.
Yeah.
And he said he couldn't believe it when Mariah Carey turned up. She was so low maintenance and so down to earth. He was expecting the diva to turn up.
Yes.
The diva who won't take the stairs and request 10 puppies in her dressing room. But it doesn't
actually
exist.
Some of these divas are actually the most hard-working, down-to-earth people. And only their diva aspect comes from wanting it to be really good.
Perfect, yeah.
Which is kind of good. Having a gangplank built for her because she didn't want to walk across a plank to get on the boat.
To get on the boat for Death on the Nile. Yeah, she's an old lady at this point in those old costumes. Yeah. They're wanting her to walk across a plank of wood to get on the boat, and she said no. But she, again, like you said earlier, she's doing it for everyone.
Yes.
She's doing it for the cast and the crew who also have to walk across that plank of wood. And as Bette Davis, you do have a certain rank.
Yeah.
So you can pull rank and say no when you build a proper platform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you do realise that sometimes people working in films, the actors, don't always get treated very well.
Yeah.
So,
Well, like she was saying about the Faye Dunaway film, they were in the middle of the desert. They're not all sat there being fanned and fed grapes.
No,
they're in a really hot. Then Faye Dunaway's driving around in her air-conditioned limo.
Yeah, drinking champagne, not
holding
up.
Everybody up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But I also got from that even the stage of Bette Davis's career, she doesn't necessarily have a luxurious Winnebago to go relax.
That's true.
Relaxing.
She actually says TV, she had to take a massive hit because there's no big dressing rooms or chauffeurs. You have to turn up yourself, get on with it, which she does.
Yeah, she does. She's a grafter.
Yeah.
And do you know what as well? Just the whole, like you say, that she was getting all these accolades that later, like that almost became her job. She was a real chat show fixture. Yeah. She had a theatre show, like an evening with Bette Davis, where you could go and ask her questions and answers. Okay, people didn't want to employ her as an actor anymore because she was 70. Mm. Or maybe she would get some acting work. But then she still went and did these theatre shows. Mm. She still went on the chat show because that's her worth ethic.
Yeah.
She always needs to be working.
Actually, it sounds really good, that An Evening with Bette Davis.
Yeah.
Because she said the first hour was all the different clips from her films, and then she'd come on and say what a dump and with a cigarette.
Yeah.
So she does have a whole passage, a bit like Rod with his hair.
Yeah.
There's a whole almost chapter on working with a cigarette, which is really good. It's like she said she only took up smoking to look more sophisticated because she turned up in Hollywood a young virginal, really innocent, and she thought, if I smoke, I'm going to look a bit like I've had an interesting life and I know things. So it became a prop. But she said there's a million ways you can smoke, and there's like you can stub it out in anger, and she really made a career out of smoking.
And I love that when you said to me to watch This Is Your Life on YouTube, she's just like smoking.
Yeah.
But she's smoking at a point where a guy comes on who says that she said they did a film together and she was really impressed because he lit two cigarettes at the same time and handed one to her. So they got him to do it for her while she was smoking a cigarette.
She had to put
the cigarette out so he could light her another one. So you would never get that on TV these days.
True. And that was legendary that at the time. And and it was just, she said in the script, it was like, he lights a cigarette, hands one to her, then he gets another one out, lights it, blah, blah, blah. It was just taking too long. And he said, what if I just light them both at once? And that actually sparked off.
Dang.
A whole new trend. Because it's really cool to light
two. I light two at the same time.
It's quite good, actually.
Yeah, smoking's great.
She just never stops.
Did you ever smoke?
No.
Good.
Smoking is. Smoking
is bad for your health. Don't do it, kids.
Well, she lived quite a long life, considering.
Yeah, but she did have
a vasectomy and die eventually.
Let's talk about the daughter a minute. Beedie, who's written this book about Bette Davis. I mean, I've not read it, so I don't know what's in it, but by all accounts, it's not great. But there are things in this book that Bette Davis has written about her life that you kind of think, oh, perhaps she wasn't the greatest mother, actually. There's one here. Hang on, let me find it. Betty Davis writes, "My daughter was brought up by a working mother. I would come home from the studio when BD was growing up, and from the minute I came through the door, no one spoke. BD had a drink prepared for me. I would sit down, finish the drink, and that would relax me just enough to be ready for a conversation." That's, I mean, that doesn't sound like a great mother, does it?
Hilarious that you singled out that passage, because so did I.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wrote that down as well.
Yeah.
And I've only written two bits down.
Right.
Because I thought, wow, that's exactly the same as Joan Crawford. She used to come home, her daughter mixed her a drink, no one spoke.
Wow.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
And you've got to have a drink. So they are, I mean, she is an alcoholic. She says...
Who, Betty Davis?
Yeah, because she says when she's come out of surgery, and you know,
the doctors have said
she can't drink
anymore.
Or smoke, and she couldn't handle that at all. So she went a month. She had managed a month.
You're right, actually. She was a hard spirits woman because she used to laugh at people who drank white wine.
Yes.
She was like, what's the point? And the doctor, then she said the irony of it is, after her operations, the doctor said, well, you can drink a bit of wine. And she hated it.
Yeah.
She'd always laughed at people then, who drank wine.
Yeah, and she managed a month without smoking and then went to low tar and made white wine spritzers or whatever.
Yeah.
So she was an alcoholic, same as Joan. And that's exactly the same behaviour with her daughter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she wasn't a great mother. I'm going to put that out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether she was not a good enough mother that warranted her daughter to write a book about it.
Yeah.
But I don't think she's a mother that she thinks she is. Let me say that.
We seem to take the side of whoever's book we're reading, because of course you do, because their voice is in your head.
Yeah.
And you need to read the other one.
Something else that makes me think that she's not the greatest mother, and you can shoot me down on this. When BD, her daughter, was 16, she married a 30-year-old man.
Oh, yeah, she really wanted to escape. So if we were reading her book, it might be one of those where she couldn't wait to get free, and that was her way out.
Yeah.
Although she's still with that bloke, by all accounts.
Why would a mother let her 16-year-old daughter marry a man twice her age?
She didn't want her to. She was so against it. That's half of their problems, I think. She really didn't like the bloke. She thought he didn't let her speak. He was controlling. I bet she was too.
So do you think Betty Davis let her 16-year-old daughter marry a 30-year-old man because her relationship with her daughter wasn't great and she didn't want her to hate her even more?
Probably, because there's a lot about her not... Like, oh, what could I have done differently? I shouldn't have taken her to the Cannes Film Festival. Then she would never have met him. And, you know, and she was in hospital, the daughter, and the bloke visited, and she's like, oh no, this is supposed to have gone away, and it's still carrying on.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they love each other, I can't stop it. And then she's busy as well, so the daughter had gone to England to visit him. And...
Do you know what? You've just reminded me that she thought the relationship would fizzle out
with
this hombre, even after they got married.
Yeah.
She said she'd give them, on their first wedding anniversary, she sent them a dozen roses. On the second, she sent them 24. On the third, she sent them 36. And on the fifth wedding anniversary, she said, right, you're just getting a dozen roses, however many years, and I had to accept after 5 years that they were going to stay together.
Yeah.
Wow. So for that whole 5 years of marriage, she was still hoping that relationship would fizzle out.
I think she said, I thought I'd have my daughter till she was at least 21.
Yeah.
Similar to Joan again. And Malia, they have these kids and they kind of think, they've got a companion they don't have to pay for a bit. I mean, Catherine, the assistant, is paid.
Yeah.
As much as it seems like a love, you know, a friendship of love, she's on the payroll.
And of course, it's so much easier to maintain a relationship with someone when you're being paid.
Yeah.
But also if they're not a blood relative and you don't have the thing of the being the mother and the daughter, you know?
Yeah.
So many more allowances can be made. But do you know what? It kind of 16 is so young.
It is, unless you've had a really complicated life that makes you a lot older than 16.
Well, Betty Davis did say that
she would have had.
Yeah, she says that she was older than, often thought of as being older than 16.
Exactly, she would have been shipped off to the private schools and all that stuff. You know, same as Christina Crawford. By the time you're 16, you are so ready to get out and live a life
like
on
Jane
your
Fonda.
Own. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't you think that's a shame? That somebody who's 16 is so much older than a 16-year-old? In a way, if they've had to become that by themselves, you haven't been a great parent.
All right. Well, some other cultures would say 16 is very old and it's childbearing. I don't know. But anyway, they lasted. They seemed fairly happy together. And
BD and her husband.
Yeah
no, absolutely. I'm not trying to demonise that too much. It's just the thought of a mother letting a 16-year-old marry a 30-year-old.
She did not want to. But and here's some more stuff. Okay, so they had kids. She loved being a grandmother, but she didn't want to put upon them too much. There's a lot about that, that she really didn't want to be that mother-in-law. At one point, she takes BD's kid as a nine-year-old to be in a film with her.
Is it Ashley is his name? Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah.
Says he was brilliant and he had an amazing time.
Yeah.
And at one point, he didn't seem to hear well, so they took him to to the hospital. And her daughter had gone, well, I think it's a waste of time. If you want to waste your money. So they had him analysed. And there's the end of a pencil with the rubber on the end stuck in his ear. And it had been there, what, how long? A year or two?
Yeah, a long time.
He'd had headaches for a couple of years.
Yes.
And he had the end of a pencil stuck in his ear. So they had that removed and the headache stopped immediately. And obviously he was a lot happier and he could hear better. Yeah. I think he'd had to have a hearing aid as well because he was 50% deaf or something in that ear. So that's neglect on the daughter's part.
No, 100%.
Yeah. And so that's great for him. She says he has an amazing time on the film. And a year later they got awards. They both got awards and went to a ceremony. But from the bit at the end when it talks about the daughter's book, it just briefly wafts over that that was a horrendous experience for her son. Well, if it was so horrendous, why did you keep sending your kid to his gran?
Yeah, right.
Really? Because...
But it might have been a horrendous experience because he never acted again.
No.
Even though he won an award for it, I was really surprised that that kid... Betty Davis's grandson, who had a part in a film with her, which he won an award for, could have become a great actor, and he chose not to.
Yeah, so it's the clue that there's two sides to it.
Yeah,
great that he got the pencil removed from his head, though.
And BD was in films. Betty Davis put BD in for like when she was like three years old. Then again, a bit later, and she never wanted to be an actor.
No.
So, from everything we've like read between the lines, do you think Betty Davis was a terrible mother?
I think she was a showbiz mother.
Yeah,
and everything that comes with that. Now, she does talk about love, and she talks about the different blokes and what went wrong.
Yeah,
and it's quite interesting because they obviously weren't brilliant. One of them died, so it's not her fault.
Yeah.
So it's not all her fault. So then in 1945, this bloke, he was an artist called William Grant Sherry. He'd never heard of her.
Yeah.
And he'd come out of the army. Apparently, he was telling his army mates he wanted to marry a rich woman.
And he got Betty Davis.
Yeah, he married Betty Davis.
This is BD's dad, right?
That's BD's dad. She was born in 1947. Now, Betty Davis was about 40 and had given up any hope of having a child.
Uh-huh.
So, but he was very violent and he'd plotted to kidnap BD because he was having an affair with the nanny textbook.
Right.
I mean, it's cliche, isn't it? He then married that nanny and they had kids and they stayed together forever. So you can't really deny that, can he?
Wow.
But he was violent and he used to like punch her co-stars and stuff.
Oh shit, yes he did because he was insanely jealous.
Yeah.
Wow. So and he was just effectively just wanted the money. So from that, he just wanted to marry a rich woman. The more we find out about her, it's less surprising that her daughter did write a book. Because if that's her dad as well, she didn't have a great time as a child. Her dad was plotting to kidnap
her. This Gary Merrill sounds quite nice.
He's an actor. He's the one. This is the one that Sherry punched.
Yeah, it's a co-star. I think he punched, but. Their biggest argument was they went to the cinema to watch a film with Gary Merrill in.
Yes.
Neither of them knew him.
Yes.
And she said he was very attractive in this film.
Yes.
And they had a massive row because he was jealous.
Yeah.
And she ended up marrying him.
This is the extraordinary thing. Like Rod Stewart watching a fitness commercial on TV and then marrying Rachel Hunter.
Yeah, yeah.
This reminded me of that. That Bette Davis can be sat in a cinema watching a handsome actor and then 2 years later be married to him.
Yeah.
It's a different world.
Yeah.
How nice to be able to go to cinema, see the handsome actor and then actually make ways that you can meet them and marry them.
Yeah.
It's not real life.
Well, it is real life. She said that's what got them because they're in All About Eve, which is really famous.
Yeah.
And they kind of fell in love with each other and thought that they were the characters from the film, but they weren't.
Right.
And that's where they kind of went wrong.
Yeah.
But they were together a long time and he adapted BD. And then
adapted.
He adopted BD. Yeah. Might have changed her a bit, to be fair. So she might have adapted. And then they adopted another a little girl called Margot as a baby. Yeah, they hardly mention it. It crops up later, doesn't it?
I can't believe that.
And they also adopted Michael.
Yeah.
So
this is with Gary Merrill. So that he adopts Beady.
Yeah.
And then they want more children, but Betty Davis is older. So they adopt a girl and a boy as babies.
Yeah.
And the girl turns out to be brain damaged.
Well, does she develop brain damage?
I think she's just a baby and it wasn't recognised, and as she grew up.
Actually, with all the knowledge we have now, it could have been fetal alcohol syndrome or something like that.
It could have been a number of things, But when you're a baby and you don't know it until you're older.
Well, yeah, we've got a lot more information about these things now.
I just basically was surprised at the way she wrote about it in the book. She said, we found out that the daughter had brain damage. So they basically gave her back.
They did.
I mean...
Well, they found her at an amazing school.
Yeah, and they paid for her to go there.
And almost never saw her again. It is quite shocking.
It is shocking. But at the same time, I did think about that and I thought, wow.
Yeah.
So they had a disabled child and they basically didn't want it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that baby then did actually get provided for. So it was good that that the baby had rich parents.
Yeah, and I'm not judging it in any way at all. It was just quite shocking to read because they don't really mention... You see pictures of three kids and then you don't hear any more about the third kid until way later in the book. And then she says at one point that she used to sometimes come and visit. And there was a point where she took her out for this big day in New York and they had all these amazing experiences, saw a show... And went to dinner and lots of people came up to Betty Davis saying, can I have your autograph? And then on the drive home, the daughter said, can I have your autograph too? And she said, you've got to laugh or you'll cry or breaks your heart or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're like, bloody hell.
Oh, so she did still maintain some form of contact.
Why is that? Yeah. Anyway, not to judge it,
You can judge it. It's what we're doing here.
Well, I suppose so, but you don't get all the information.
Yeah, you don't. You get the information that Betty Davis wanted us to have, because it's her book. It's very little.
Yeah.
Which then does lend itself to us thinking, well, she didn't do an awful lot for her, because if she did keep her in her life and provide for her, it would be in the book.
She threw money at it, at the situation, and that's...
It's not a great situation for somebody who's adopted a baby, for them that baby to turn out to be brain damaged and need a higher level of care. You don't expect
that. But you should, with the information we have today, you should absolutely expect that from adopting a child, because it's known now all the problems that come.
Is it?
Yeah. So anyway, that's all in there. It's brushed over a lot.
Yeah.
But I think she maintained a good relationship with Michael. Probably.
But again, she doesn't really mention him a lot, does she?
No. So Margot's in a home. She's cut off her other daughter because after that book.
Yeah.
So she's only really got Michael, who's carrying on his life somewhere anyway. Yeah. He's a lawyer, turns into a lawyer, doesn't he?
Okay.
He has his own law firm.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's only really got Kathy, who she pays.
Yeah.
And then even she's left her. It does seem very solitary, even though she's getting accolades.
And she really loved the song Betty Davis Eyes and has a gold disc on her wall.
I love that she loves that song. I love that she lived long enough to hear that song.
Yeah.
And she did have really nice eyes.
Yeah, especially in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Thrift Shop Biography. We love making this podcast and we're absolutely thrilled that so many of you are already listening. We're new to this and you could really help us out by leaving us a review somewhere, wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you could share us, tell your friends about us or drop some links on social media. We have a Facebook page called Thrift Shop Biography. So make sure you come over there to hear about the episodes first and what else we're up to. Okay, see you next week. And if you're new here, there are loads more episodes now to go and listen in the back catalogue. So make sure you go and enjoy them. Okay, thank you very much.